Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, November 15th, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Nothing casual about this Friday, ladies and gentlemen. However, joining us, Emma Vigeland from the Young Turks, and also Judy Gold from her birthday. It's her birthday today.
I'm sure she'll be in a great mood.
Completely insane day, ladies and gentlemen. Breaking news. Roger Stone was just found guilty on multiple counts of witness tampering and lying to Congress. Seven-count indictment that alleged he lied to lawmakers about WikiLeaks, tampered with witnesses, and obstructed a House Intelligence Committee probe. Also on the program today, as we speak, former Ukrainian Ambassador Yovanovitch induces Trump to commit illegal witness tampering in public moments ago. And speaking of going to prison, Rudy Giuliani, maybe it's time he reaches out to his old pal Bernie Kerik to get some doing time tips. Meanwhile, back to the impeachment, a second government official overheard the now infamous Sondland Trump call, where Trump was just asking about the investigations, and Sondland said he doesn't care about Ukraine. Then, the DOJ's investigation of the deep state, the investigation of the investigators, is becoming highly irregular in the way they're going about it. In Kentucky, Matt Bevin concedes. Andy Beshear announces that on day one, he will reinstate the voting rights for 140,000 people. And a career Office of Management budget official is expected to break ranks and testify in the impeachment hearings. Meanwhile, in a perfect example of how the Democrats get very nervous when things are going in their way, they're on the brink of a massive sellout on Trump's new NAFTA. Ayanna Pressley introduces a major decarceration plan in the House. And the Senate confirms a Second Circuit judge who is opposed by every existing civil and women's rights groups in the country. Lastly, another mass shooting takes two teenagers' lives in California, as well as the life of the shooter, 16-year-old boy. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of stuff going on today. Far too much for any single day. And just a little bit of a programming note. We did not follow the hearings today. In many respects, this morning, I regretted it. I was watching it. Right now, I think they're just starting with the questioning by the Republican counsel. I will talk about this a little bit later, but the long and short of it is Marie Yovanovitch was the former ambassador to Ukraine. Her testimony was far more compelling, frankly, than I had anticipated it would be, insofar as it outlined just the lengths in which they went to promote the investigation of Biden and to this sort of revisionist history of 2016 interference. And I think it raised the stakes of just the relevance of having like a non-corrupted diplomatic corps. I will also say that if you wanted to choose a set of witnesses for any type of hearings, and you wanted them to be compelling, well-spoken, confident, coming off as completely neutral professionals, it feels like you would want to pick witnesses from the diplomatic corps. It becomes obvious after you watch it, but you know, you listen to Bill Taylor, you listen to Yovanovitch, even Kent, who didn't have as much of a compelling story to tell, but nevertheless, they all deliver it in such a way that you're like, they're all Jimmy Stewarts in some respect. And during her testimony, literally during her testimony, they were talking about how she felt a little bit threatened by some of the things that the president had said. And she didn't understand, you know, what really a lot of what was going on. And during the testimony, it is Donald Trump starts tweeting about her. Now, this is witness tampering. This is witness intimidation. It was ongoing. They stopped the hearing at one point. Schiff announced that was happening and made it clear we take witness tampering very, very seriously. I would sort of be shocked at this point if one of the counts of impeachment did not include and cite that very act. Simultaneously, literally within moments after that, Roger Stone is convicted by a jury in his trial of witness tampering. And I have a feeling that was specifically about Randy Cretico, but I don't know the specific indictments. We will see those. But all this is going on simultaneously. And we should also say that apparently there was almost 14 million people who watched. At any given time, there were 14 million people watching the testimony the other day of Taylor and Kent. That's not including what was happening on the streaming. So there is a significant subset of Americans who are paying attention to this. I would imagine it is, reiterate, this is going to have big implications in certain Senate races. From an electoral standpoint, I wouldn't imagine that it goes much further than that. I suppose it could. It's certainly going to mitigate. It's hard for me to believe that had they not done this, that there wouldn't be some backlash in terms of Democrats. There is one thing, and it is hard to assess this, but it's worth noting there were two Democrats who voted against these impeachment proceedings. One of them is from New Jersey. What's his name again? I can't remember. Drew. What is it? Drew, right? Jeff Van Drew. Jeff Van Drew's race as of 3 weeks ago, prior to the vote, was lean Democrat. It has now been changed in its assessment, I think, by Cook to toss-up. Now, I haven't looked at the numbers. I don't know if there's a way that they can make this assessment, but on its face, it would appear that his voting against going forward with impeachment may have undercut his Democratic support. I mean, it's a toss-up district. But nevertheless, he seems to be moving in the wrong direction. So I don't know. But just a it's a data point. I don't know exactly how to assess it, but I don't know. Maybe something has changed in that district in the past, you know, month or so to change that rating. But that's the only thing that's quite obvious. Maybe it could be that Republicans are that much madder at him as opposed to in other districts across the country. I don't know. But that could go either way. But he voted against it. It didn't help him, apparently. That much is clear. All right. Let's go to this clip of Marie Yovanovitch. This, it's a short clip. She's being questioned by the Democratic counsel, Andrew Goldman. Daniel Goldman. Forgive me, folks. It's Casual Friday. I'm not even wearing a hard collared shirt. Daniel Goldman is asking her about sort of this is the one of the key exchanges, but her testimony was full of this. And it really I found it far more compelling than I had anticipated. Here it is.
You said there were concerns up the street. What did you understand that to mean?
The White House.
I pause it now. OK, so she's being contacted from someone at the State Department saying there's concerns about you from up the street. Now, she had a review in March where she got, you know, straight A's or whatever it is, however you get as a member of the diplomatic corps. Then she saw the Rudy Giuliani going around and saying stuff about her as being problematic. And Donald Trump Jr. saying stuff about her that was problematic. And she's like, what's going on? Why am I being attacked by Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump Jr. on Twitter? And so she's getting wind of all this. Now, remember, she also testified that Joe Biden, when he came over and said, you know, we need to get rid of this prosecutor, that was official government policy. The U.S. policy was public. We need to get rid of this prosecutor because he's corrupt. We need to get rid of this prosecutor because we've been asked by other countries who are trying to do investigations into Burisma that this prosecutor is blocking us from doing it. And so she doesn't understand U.S. stated policy. She's following U.S. stated policy. She's a professional. She has no idea why she's being attacked. And she gets word that there's a problem with her from where? Up the street. What did up the street mean? I think it meant the White House.
Street. What did you understand that to mean?
The White House.
Did she explain in any more detail what she meant by concerns about your security?
No, she didn't. I did specifically ask whether this had to do with the Mayor Giuliani's allegations against me and so forth. And she said she didn't know. It didn't even actually appear to me that she seemed to be aware of that. No reason was offered.
Did she explain what the urgency was for you to come back on the next flight?
The only thing that's pertinent to that was that when she said that there were concerns about my security, that's all. But it was not further explained.
Now, prior to this abrupt callback to Washington, D.C., had you been offered an extension of your post by the State Department?
Yes. The Undersecretary for Political Affairs had asked whether I would extend for another year, departing in July of 2020.
When was that request made?
In early March.
So about a month and a half before this call?
Yes.
Did anyone at the State Department ever express concerns about your job performance?
No.
Now, after you returned to Washington a couple days after that, you met with the Deputy Secretary of State. And at your deposition, you said that the Deputy Secretary of State told you that you had done nothing wrong, but that there was a concerted campaign against you. What did he mean by that?
I'm not exactly sure, but I took it to mean that the allegations that Mayor Giuliani and others were putting out there, that's what it was.
And who else was involved in this concerted campaign against you?
There were some members of the press and others in Mayor Giuliani's circle.
And who from Ukraine?
In Ukraine, I think, well, Mr. Lutsenko, the prosecutor general, and Mr. Shokin, his predecessor, certainly.
And at this time, Mr. Lutsenko was the lead prosecutor general, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And had President Zelensky indicated whether or not he was going to keep him on after the election?
He had indicated he would not be keeping on Mr. Lutsenko.
And I believe you testified earlier that Mr. Lutsenko had a reputation for being corrupt, is that right?
That's correct.
Now, during this conversation, did the deputy secretary tell you about your future as the ambassador to Ukraine?
Well, he told me I needed to leave.
What did he say?
He said that, I mean, there was a lot of back and forth, but ultimately he said the words that, you know, every Foreign Service officer understands, the president has lost confidence in you. That was, you know, a terrible thing to hear. And I said, well, you know, I guess I have to go then. But no real reason was offered as to why I had to leave and why it was me.
Okay. And that's basically it. That's the gist of the story. That Giuliani, his two clients or associates who are actually on trial now or, you know, in police custody, Parnas and the other guy, were working with Lutsenko, who was the corrupt prosecutor in Ukraine, and Yovanovitch was an obstacle to them to create this new fiction. They needed to have their person do it. And who was their person? It was Sondland. They brought in the ambassador to the EU. And then I think they realized, like, wait a second. We may need somebody who actually, like, knows whose phone numbers are which in the Ukrainian government. Let's bring in Bill Taylor. Now, little did they know they were bringing in Serpico, but that's basically, this is how it progressed. You'll recall in Bill Taylor's testimony, when he was brought in, he said, I'm a little concerned because I just saw what happened to Yovanovitch, and I don't want to get involved in that meat grinder. She just got taken out for what appears to be no reason. And they brought him in. They tried to sequester him, to keep him on the so-called regular track and not aware of what was happening on the irregular track, which is why it took him so long to understand what was happening. And about 2 months in, it starts to like occur to him, something weird is going on here. And that's why I think they brought in Yovanovitch, is to make it clear, like, the origins of this. What they sort of did from a narrative structure is they put the loaded gun on the table with Bill Taylor and Kent. And then they went back to tell the story of where the gun was and what, you know, and then what happens. And next week, on Tuesday, we're going to hear from four people, I think it is. We're going to hear from Vinland. This is the Ukrainian expert who was on the call. We're going to hear about the cover-up. Who else are we hearing from on Tuesday? It's like there's two or three other people. On Wednesday, we will hear from Sondland. So it's Tim Morrison is going to be there on Tuesday. He is the NSE director for Russia affairs. He is on some of those text messages. He was one of the guys sort of in the regulars. Jennifer Williams was Pence's national security aide. It's going to be interesting to see where she lands on this. Kurt Volker was a special envoy to Ukraine. He was also part of the irregulars. And it's going to be interesting to see what he has to say. And then the coup de grace will be Sondland on Wednesday. We're going to do all-day coverage on Tuesday for those hearings. We're going to do all-day coverage on Wednesday for those hearings. Then roll into the debate on Wednesday night. It's going to be a long couple of days. By Thursday, I imagine we're just going to do recaps of those things. So this is important stuff. I think it's, you know, I think you could do four more of these, like, little vignettes, if you will. This is like, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, my kid and the books that he reads. You know, you got the Magic Treehouse, and then you got a bunch of different versions of that are variations of this overall story. And the overall story is the Trump administration incredibly corrupt. And here's how they were corrupt in Ukraine. You could do the here's how they were corrupt in regards to Turkey. Here's how they were corrupt in regards to Saudi Arabia.
Here's how they were corrupt in a boat. Here's how they were corrupt with a goat.
Exactly. And at one point, I think you could probably sew these things together in some way. There's just a lot of people making a lot of money and also trying to establish, you know, trying to get political benefit out of these things.
Well, can I ask like a wide angle question here? Because like, okay, we know that they probably do not have the votes to remove Trump from office.
I would say that's almost 100% the case.
So if all of these corruption crimes come out in the course of these hearings and Trump is not removed, isn't that going to be just incredibly depressing as an indictment of our system?
Well, it's going to be an indictment not of our system, it seems to me. It's going to be an indictment of a political party that is refusing to convict him. The more airtight this case is, and it's voted upon by the Democrats in the House, and it's sent to the Senate, to the extent that they have established that this guy is super corrupt, this is all on Mitch McConnell. I mean, this is what we were arguing for people who are arguing for impeachment, strictly on political terms. This was one of the primary reasons, is because even though you're not going to be able to remove him from office, you're going to make it very explicit as to what is the obstacle to remove this guy who is uniquely corrupt. Which is not to say that every president, I mean, I certainly think that we could have impeached George Bush. And in many respects, what he did caused far more pain and horror, frankly, than so far what Donald Trump has done. And I think we should have impeached George Bush. I think that he could have been impeached after the fact, you know, in a myriad of different ways. But the way that you get accountability is not by providing less attempts at accountability.
No, I know.
And I think, yes, will it be depressing that that Mitch McConnell does this? But I found it depressing that he wouldn't let, you know, a Supreme Court justice, even one that I wasn't particularly thrilled about, have a hearing. I mean, all of this sucks. It all sucks. And the question is, like, how do you get to a place of less suckiness? And you don't get there unless you start to point out, here's the biggest purveyor of suckiness, and it's the Republican Party. And then once you start to get rid of that factor in our system of government, you can start working on the more nuanced suckiness, in my estimation. And these aren't necessarily, you know, they doesn't necessarily have to be completely sequential, although I think it helps. When you have an all Democratic government, it's much easier to isolate where the suckiest parts of the Democratic Party are. In fact, I would argue that part of the reason why we got things like Occupy in 2011, as opposed to any other time, not because there's some type of magic number where 3 years out from a devastating financial crisis is when people rebel. It's when you become frustrated with the failure of the people that you thought were going to fix it, and they're not fixing it.
Oh, yeah. People were incredibly disillusioned with Obama.
Exactly. And you can't get to that point unless you get rid of George Bush. Right? I mean, if John McCain is in office in 2011, you have to work through a different thing, which is, you know, gets back to why I always felt like for the actual growth of the left, the better foil would have been Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump. Because now, you know, and to the extent that I was surprised by any of it, it was just the ability to sort of like distinguish between the left and the resistance. Last time around, that did not exist. But even to the extent that that happens, it still convolutes the fight, I think.
I would have occupied Wall Street regardless.
Well, that's true, but it wouldn't have had the same impact. I mean, with all due respect, you could have done that. Where were you in 2009? All right. Folks, one of today's sponsors is NewsVoice, which is the first ever entirely open, crowdsourced, and democratized platform for news. You can download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. Look, in this country, the vast majority of news, as you know, is owned by the same five huge corporations. In fact, Google has changed their algorithm in such a way that the reason why we're getting less views from non-subscribers is because they've changed their algorithm. And so if you look at one of our videos, instead of seeing videos from other independent sort of news aggregators, purveyors, whatever you want to call it, you'll see now MSNBC or CNN or Fox or whatever.
Our stream on Wednesday was beating Vice by about 2-1, and Vice was on the front page. We weren't.
Huh. Shocking. I wonder why that is. Maybe they haven't heard of our $1 billion valuation that I have now imposed on our show. But anyways, the point is this. It's important for you to pay attention where your news is coming from, who owns which media outlets, which political biases are in play. We're pretty out front with where our biases are. That doesn't exist in other places. And the way you do that is via NewsVoice. It's free. It's crowdsourced. It's a mobile app. It's a website. It lets you create a personal news feed and maintain a clear picture of where your news is coming from, what political slants may exist. It gives you the opportunity to compare different perspectives. It helps you aggregate news from corporate outlets, international outlets, local news, independent media, giving you access to every side of every story. A lot of times I get questions like, how can I become more savvy about the media I'm consuming? You go to a platform like this that aggregates different sources, and you begin to get savvy after a while as you read this stuff and you see the differences. NewsVoice is fueled by its community of users. They contribute to the platform. They fact check. They submit stories. They upvote stories. They write story summaries. You can comment on stories. You can debate politics with other members if you want there. And when you stay active in the community, you level up and earn perks on the platform. The NewsVoice Play feature lets you listen to your personal news feed every day through customizable audio news playlists. We should get the AM Quickie on that, Brendan. Will you put a note? It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. NewsVoice, next generation news aggregator, social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and productive political discussions. You can get totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. Put a link underneath the video if you're watching on YouTube. We have it in the podcast description, of course. And lastly, today's support for today's show also comes from Mova Globes. I love these things. I really do. Mova Globes turns on all their own. We got Christmas coming up. We got Hanukkah coming up. They can do so with or without a base. This could just sit right on my desk. I have an acrylic base over there. In any setting with any type of ambient lighting, there's no batteries are needed, no sloppy cords. Instead, hidden magnets. They have over 40 different designs. I got two right here on my desk. We keep these babies here all the time now because I'm in love with these things. Look at this. Look at this. This is, somebody's going to cut this for a GIF.
Someone's going to cut this for a trope.
I would hope. With over 40 different designs, including world maps, outer space, famous artworks, there's something for everybody. The Outer Space Collection has graphics that are provided by NASA and JPL. JPL, we had figured that out what that was before. It's like some type of space.
It's the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Yeah, wow. Okay. And complete with planets, moons, asteroid, constellation designs. It's a great gift for the person who has everything, or it's a great gift for people who don't have everything. Pair it with your home decor as a conversation piece. You can use it as a way of getting your kids to be excited about things like geography and space. They've got that. My next globe is going to be the 1791, which has the voyages of Captain James Cook. I read a big book about him going to Australia, I think, now that I think about it. I can't remember what the name of it was. I mean, I read it years ago, but... In the 1790, no Antarctica. They hadn't discovered it. It's cool to watch and see how sort of people's cartography evolved. Plus, they got globes like this where you can look at the Earth from as if you were from outer space. They've got one of Mars, Uranus, which, of course, my son is very excited about. They've got Van Gogh and Monet artwork that is they put on the globes. 40 different versions. Go check it out. It's pretty amazing. Go to movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority. Get 10% off your purchase. That's Mova, M-O-V-A, globes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 10% off your purchase. Really cool gift. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Emma Viglin. We're going to talk about 2020. We're going to figure out why Deval Patrick is in the race. We're going to figure out what the heck Mike Bloomberg thinks he's doing. And we're going to talk a little bit about impeachment and the left and who knows what else. Quick break. Be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program TYT's, the TYT correspondent. I think there's maybe one or two, a couple others, but...
But I'm the most important one.
But the most important TYT correspondent, Emma Viglin. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with this. My understanding is that Cenk Uygur is running for Katie Hill's seat in, or the formerly the seat formerly occupied by Katie Hill, in a special election in California's. I can't remember what district it is. Can we get your comment? Are you
25th?
25th district. Are you how upset about you about this? Are you?
No, you know what? I'm just thrilled for him. Cenk is really. I love working for Cenk because he's just one of the most principled guys I know. He's a great boss, so if he wins, obviously I'll be sad to see him go. But he's built something great here at TYT where we can all carry the mantle, and I'm just super proud that he's taking this next step and trying to make a change, because he would be an unbelievable congressman. Can you imagine him just facing off against Jim Jordan in Congress? It would be a sight to behold.
Yeah, I would pay good money for that. I mean, I very well may actually. He has raised apparently in less than 36 hours. In the first 24 hours, my understanding, he's raised $100,000.
Yeah, I haven't checked, but I would not be surprised. He really has the ability to bring the progressive community together. We all may disagree on like some aspects of, you know, he's disagreed with different progressives on Russiagate, as they call it, all of those things. But when it comes to core progressive values, there's no one like Cenk who can carry that mantle.
Yeah, that would be pretty fun to see him in Congress, I have to say.
That's an understatement. Yeah,
yes,
I really.
It really is actually an understatement. But all right, well let's broaden out big news obviously today, Roger Stone convicted now. I don't think he's going to get a pardon from Donald Trump. That would be a little bit awkward this far out. I would imagine that's not going to come until after November of 2020. So Stone's going to spend a little bit of time in prison, and would be my guess. I mean, I guess maybe they can appeal, but we'll see.
It's likely prison time, according to the reporting on this. I mean, it's seven separate counts, so there's got to be some sort of prison time involved.
It didn't seem like the jury needed too much time either. I think in one day's worth of deliberations, he was done on all seven. And
well, they just took a look at his suits and said, this guy, there's no one who hasn't committed a crime who chooses this to dress like this.
There you go.
As opposed, unless you're like a 1980s pimp in some sort of, historical movie.
I got to think somewhere right now. Elliot Spitzer is probably got a smile on his face. About this, people would have to go back and read into Elliot Spitzer, former governor of New York's travails. Stone took credit for basically blowing the whistle on Elliot Spitzer's use of prostitutes. Leaving that aside,
certainly.
Impeachment is ongoing. Apparently 14 million people watched it the other day. I suspect by next week we're going to see people, you know, we're going to see like 18, 19 million people watching some of the hearings contemporaneously. Without getting into the weeds of the actual impeachment, give me your sense of the political implications of it going forward. Now, and just to be clear, you've been going around, you've been hitting the campaign trail a decent amount, haven't you?
Yeah, a decent amount. Less so in the past few weeks. I've kind of had a slow few weeks, but I've been doing a lot. I went to New Hampshire. I went to a different candidate town halls. I've been speaking to different supporters, at least among the base, the Democratic base. Impeachment is at the top of people's lists of priorities, and that has only expanded because of the, it sounds like an oxymoron, but leadership of Nancy Pelosi to push this forward. That's really how you get these topics into the voters' consciousnesses, collective consciousness, is by leading and pushing forward your narrative. And fortunately, she was pressured into doing so.
Oh, so from your experience on the campaign trail, this was a big priority for people?
Yeah, from talking to Democratic voters, say when I go to a Beto O'Rourke town hall, if I talk to them, not just about he's not in the race anymore, but if I was talking to them, not just about his candidacy, it was always just, we got to impeach this guy. We got to get this guy out. That was a pretty resounding calling card for all of the Democratic constituencies when I was speaking to them.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because there's that story about that guy, Van Drew in New Jersey, who was one of the two Democrats who voted against moving forward with impeachment proceedings. And apparently his the rating on his race has started to move towards Republicans after that vote. I don't know what the connection is there, but
Well, it's almost like when you have to make your own case, and conceding that the president, who is in the opposition party, has not committed a crime or you're not going to pursue the ramifications of that crime, just that makes you look weak, and weakness never sells in any race.
It's interesting. And let's just talk a little bit about the timing here, and the way they're approaching this overall. I mean, there's obviously some of the there's controversy, and I frankly, I'm not even sure where I land on this anymore. But, you know, there's multiple options on way that you handle this. You do the Ukraine thing and then you move on to Turkey, or you do the Ukraine thing, and you move on to the IRS whistleblower who Richard Neal apparently has just basically buried in someone's basement, I guess. You move on to emoluments, or you move on to obstruction, or, you know, and on and on. Or you just say, we're just going to do the Ukraine thing and send that to the Senate. Give me your take on that. And we should also just mention something that, you know, we've been talking about here for a while, which is if the timing is such that it goes to the Senate in January or February, you are taking two of the leading candidates for the Democratic primary. And there's a new poll out today that shows that Michael Bloomberg's eating into Joe Biden's lead, and Bernie Sanders is now tied for first, or I think in first, you know, more or less tied based on the margin of error nationally amongst Democrats. But you're taking Sanders and Warren basically off of the playing field in Iowa, because they're going to have to be in the Senate every day if there's these trials. Give me your overall, I guess, your omni perspective on this.
So, yeah, there was a lot there. I guess I'll just address the last thing about Sanders and Warren and the candidates that don't really matter, like Harris and Klobuchar being taken off the campaign trail potentially for two months around that for a trial in the Senate. There's no doubt in my mind that it will hurt both Sanders and Warren. And that's a terrifying thought, because we see someone like Buttigieg surging in Iowa, and he's arguably the most dangerous of them all. And, you know, it gives someone like Buttigieg an opportunity to talk about put his voice out there and make his case independent of Donald Trump, where when you have Warren and Sanders stuck in the Senate talking about Trump all the time, that's the trap that the right wants the left to fall into, in a sense, because if you don't make your own case and you're just talking about how Trump is bad, we all saw what happened in 2016. Now, I think it hurts Warren more than Bernie Sanders. I was putting the answers than Bernie Sanders. That was bizarre.
Right. Bernie
yeah, because,
Sanders.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because he has a stronger organizing base that's number one, an infrastructure that's been put in place since 2016. And secondly, just because of the emphasis that his campaign has put on grassroots organizing, and not that she hasn't, but the extent of his reach is just further in that regard.
That's interesting. I mean, can you give me an assessment? Have you been around enough to give me an assessment of what the organizations look like in the various states, in the first primary states?
I couldn't give you like a full assessment there, because I don't really have one specific beat, and we'll just go and cover whatever candidate is interesting, and it's hard for me to be that embedded. But just really from what I've learned and what I've seen anecdotally, that's my assessment of the strength of the organizing of Sanders' campaign.
What about in Iowa? Can you rate the various groups? I'm curious, because I know Buttigieg seems to have
yet to go to Iowa. Yet to go to Iowa.
Okay,
bizarrely. Yes. But yeah.
All right. And so with that said, what do you think is going on?
Siren.
Yeah, that's okay. What do you think is going on with Deval, Patrick? I mean, I understand why Bloomberg got into the race, because he's surrounded by people who are probably making a lot of money and stand to make more money if he jumps into the presidential race. And, you know, what you know, Bloomberg could do whatever he wants, and it's not going to, nothing's going to cost him anything, right?
Right.
And there are people, you know, saying to him, like, look at Mayor, you know, Mayor Pete, you're Mayor Mike. You're like, you're a million times better than him in everything. And you have the same politics, and he's doing well.
Right.
What, you know, you should jump in the race. And he goes, oh, well, thank you. I will. And that's it. But what about Deval Patrick? That just mystifies me. I have a theory, but I'm curious as to what your perspective is.
So there was a great piece in the New Republic that was out yesterday. I'd encourage everyone to read it just because it kind of aggregates all of the different notable, terrible things about Deval Patrick's record. But it also makes note and includes aspects of this Politico piece that was out now that he's announced that says from sources close to Deval Patrick himself that this is coming from Wall Street. I mean, that's almost a direct quote. I don't have the article in front of me, but and they explain this is a direct response to Wall Street anxiety about Warren. Now, they don't mention Bernie Sanders because they don't think he's a legitimate threat to actually win the nomination. He's just the dismissal is embedded in any conversation that's people are having, the elites are having about Bernie Sanders. But that's really the admission is that he is they're basically seeing that Biden is faltering. Buttigieg, I don't think people think he has a legitimate shot, although, again, his surge in Iowa is troubling. But I think that they are scrambling to try to find an alternative that they think is palatable that can represent Wall Street and the establishment's interests. And, you know, Mike Bloomberg might have been a little too on the nose by being just a straight up billionaire with zero charisma and who just proudly locked up black people and encouraged stop and frisk and helped gentrify New York City and was a literal Republican. That might have been a little too on the nose for the subterfuge that the donor class wanted to push through. So they're going with Deval Patrick, who, by the way, as governor, had the equivalent of a supermajority with both chambers being blue and did nothing except basically institute Mitt Romney's healthcare plan, the state version of Obamacare, and, yeah, didn't expand upon it at all, raised the state sales tax, which disproportionately hurts poor people. And he also legalized casino gambling and blech.
Right.
What else? So, we talked about what Obama did when he had a supermajority for those 2 years from 2008 to 2010 and how little he did there. Deval Patrick did even less, and he had it his entire tenure.
Yeah, I mean, and we should say that had he jumped into the race, let's say, I don't know, a year ago or 8 months ago or something like that, he would have had a lot of support from the sort of the Obama wing of the party. I mean, he was very popular. Now a lot of those people have signed up on other campaigns. A lot of donors are committed to other people. I just find it hard to buy that, like, that they think he's going to jump into the race at this late date, overcome Biden, overcome Buttigieg, and then have enough strength to be like, to me, this is what it sounds like a little bit to me, right? Is Fred Thompson stayed in the race in 2008, I think it was, in the Republican primary, essentially to help John McCain in South Carolina by making sure that no one ran away with South Carolina from McCain. McCain wasn't going to win it, but they wanted to make sure that nobody else, I can't remember who the candidates who were better suited for South Carolina. And he was basically a stalking horse. It seems to me that if I am worried about Joe Biden's candidacy, I am worried that he's going to get slaughtered in Iowa and slaughtered in New Hampshire. That if he comes in, that if Warren or Bernie or both of them beat Biden by 5 or 10 points, right? If he comes in and he only gets like 12% in New Hampshire and maybe Buttigieg comes in third, that's going to send a very, very strong signal that Joe Biden is not as electable as people think. And that's going to hurt him in South Carolina and then so on, so on. But Deval Patrick, he goes up to New Hampshire. He's automatically going to get 10% of the vote, it seems to me, particularly with the types of people who are in southern New Hampshire who are there, you know, sort of like more oriented towards that. And I think he's going, I think he's jumping in the race just to make sure that the gap between Joe Biden and probably Warren from their perspective, but I think they're, you know, they're sleeping a little bit on Bernie, is just not so large to mitigate the perspective on Biden's loss. Other than that, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you worked out, you walked through that, that article. That doesn't still, it's still like, could they be that stupid? Like this, that somehow Deval Patrick can jump in at this late date and do anything except for ruin Biden's campaign if he was to run throughout?
You know, I think I like your theory, but I think that there's an underestimation of the role of sycophants in
right.
these wealthy people's inner circles. You know, Deval Patrick has been floated by a lot of people in establishment arenas as a viable candidate for a very long time. And they have really internalized that neither Sanders nor Warren can defeat Donald Trump because they're too far to the left. And it's convenient for them to feel that way because then they can continue to do politics as usual and take donor money. But Deval Patrick probably sees, you know, Biden's weekend. He's not going to win. Buttigieg. People don't think he has a realistic chance to win because he has zero black people that support him. So Deval Patrick thinks I'm the alternative. I'm the one that can win. And that's, you know, you can pay a lot of consultants to tell you that. And speaking, I thought that was a really good point about New Hampshire because people who don't follow politics a lot, I think, underestimate the close-knit political democratic establishment of Massachusetts. So, you know, when Elizabeth Warren floats Deval Patrick as someone who would be in her administration, which was ludicrous, a lot of this is, you know, it's almost like New York in a certain way, but a little more progressive. That it's very tight-knit. There's a lot of machinations in the Massachusetts Democratic circles. And people in New Hampshire, you know, take it seriously and know those names. So not only will I think Deval Patrick hurt Joe Biden in New Hampshire, but I think he will hurt Elizabeth Warren.
Yep.
Not for ideological reasons, but because of the power of that Massachusetts Democratic machine.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, that's my point. I think he probably cuts into Warren more than he cuts into Biden. And
oh, okay.
And I think the idea being, I mean, he may cut into Biden a little bit in New Hampshire, but I suspect he cuts into Warren more. And that's going to, it's not going to swing it to anybody, but it's going to keep the race flat as opposed to like make it look like Biden lost big. Right. Like his Biden's 10 points. If there are three other people who get 12 points or 15 points, looks a lot better than if two of the people get 20 points and right. he's that far out of it. I mean, that's my theory. And then I guess the other thing is that if Deval Patrick becomes, you know, a significant player in this, if he's able in some way to aggregate, you know, some of these votes across the spectrum, it makes a brokered convention that much more possible. And, you know, maybe you throw your hat in the ring thinking like, maybe I'll be the one that they choose.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, the idea of a brokered convention is so terrifying that I don't even want to imagine it, to be honest with you.
I think things are about to get a lot more complicated as we go forward. But I guess we will see. I don't know if we've left anything on the table here. I mean, anything that you think we should be thinking about going into these hearings next week and the debate that's going to happen on Wednesday night? I mean, do you have any sense of what's going to happen with this debate? We won't see Deval Patrick. We won't see Bloomberg. We're going to see, this is the first time that Buttigieg is going to come in there with some swagger, right? I mean, this is going to be the closest he's going to been to the center of the dais. Do you think people are going to go after him?
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, I don't know if they will go out after him, but you're saying like, oh, this is going to be the first time he has some swagger. He's had some unearned swagger for quite a long time. I mean, I do think he's a threat. I think, you know, what is so frustrating when I'm talking about him to, you know, friends and family, it's just, oh, he's so smart. You know, but what is he saying? Nothing. So you can say big words. He's not saying anything at all. And I think, and you know, I've talked about this before a little, just this fetishization of intelligence without really any of the substance that's necessary for intelligence that occurs on the left, or really not the left, but you know, Democratic voters. That's the entire thing that's buoying Buttigieg's campaign. And just another point on him. I mean, it takes a specific kind of arrogance to run for president, being mayor of a small college town. I mean, he did it. He ran for DNC chair. Now he's doing it now. And he really thinks he's the top dog, and it's going to be between him and Warren, as he said on that Showtime show.
Well, I guess it remains to be seen. He does. He's very smart. He speaks a lot of different languages.
Tulsi Gabbard's still making the cut. I mean, what was that? She was polling at 6% in New Hampshire. Goes to show that fighting with Hillary Clinton, her input and her fall from grace in the Democratic Party is as follows. Her fighting with someone gives them a polling bump more than her endorsing or speaking positively about them.
Yes.
So Tulsi Gabbard is now riding the wave of fighting with Hillary Clinton.
To be fair, if you look into that, it is you know, New Hampshire is one of those crossover states where independents and Republicans can vote in the Democratic primary. And so much of her support, I think, actually comes from non-Democrats, which is, you know,
right.
that's those are the rules, and that's good. But I'm not surprised that. What did you think that was about? I mean, I was just about to say goodbye, but I still can't figure out, like, is Hillary Clinton that just sort of, I mean, I'd like to think that when people like Hillary Clinton, who were politicians for years and a top diplomat, right, that, I mean, she was head of the State Department, for God's sakes, that when they go and they make public announcements like that, or pronouncements, that they have an agenda and that they've thought this thing through and they think if I say this, X, Y, or Z is going to happen. What did she think was going to happen? Do you think that she did? I mean, why did you think she did that? Do you think she just did it because she hates Tulsi Gabbard?
I think the whole Democratic establishment hates Tulsi Gabbard. That doesn't mean that Tulsi Gabbard is a progressive or a good candidate by any stretch, but what's frustrating is just as the legitimate criticisms of Tulsi Gabbard were breaking through, waffling on Medicare for All, her connections with far right leaders, her excuses of Gujarat, her countless just weird concessions to the right, you know, just as those were breaking through, Hillary Clinton has to come through with this BS about her being a Russian asset, and then that galvanizes everyone to think that maybe all criticism of Hillary Clinton, I mean, excuse me, of Tulsi Gabbard is as ridiculous as Hillary's. But when it comes to, you know, what she was trying to do there, I think, you know, people in the establishment do like to kind of poo-poo her. I mean, we saw with Kamala Harris saying she was a top-tier candidate after Gabbard went after her, and now they're basically, you know, very close in polling. And then we're seeing it with Hillary Clinton as well. So it's frustrating because I feel like as a progressive, I'm caught in the middle there where I'm grossed out by the establishment attacks on her, But
you don't want to be put in a position to defend things that you don't think are defendable.
I certainly do not want to defend Tulsi Gabbard, and I often deliberately antagonize her supporters on Twitter.
Where do you think the support that she's getting in New Hampshire, at whose expense do you think that came from?
I don't know. I mean, your point about independents and Republicans being able to vote makes sense. I don't know what her voter base within the Democratic electorate is, except for disaffected Democratic voters who are upset with the establishment, but that's right. All Bernie voters.
Exactly. That to me is the only rational explanation for what she thought that she was doing. If she actually had an agenda, I think it was her way. I think that in her mind, if I pick a fight with Tulsi Gabbard, it's going to hurt. It's going to shave off a couple of points off of Bernie. I don't know if that was the case, but that to me seems like the most rational explanation for why she did that. It's either she had no idea what she was doing or that's what she thought she was doing. But who knows?
But she's also able to throw bombs without stakes these days. And Tulsi Gabbard doesn't have any defenders.
Well, so. That's true. But you know, she if Hillary Clinton has an agenda that is, beyond a resentment of Trump, understandable, it would also be a resentment of Bernie Sanders. And if she was to play any, if she wanted to feel like she was playing a role, that would be the role. And I'm not convinced that Deval Patrick's not the guy who's doing that same thing with Warren. Like, I think the people have been, I don't think it's that nefarious. People want to support their policy agendas and want it reflected in our government, even if they're not in their government. Certainly Hillary Clinton feels no less of a stake in this than you or I. Right.
Right.
And so if I get up here and I talk about Pete Buttigieg, I'm doing so because I hope I'm convincing a couple of people not to vote for Pete Buttigieg. I would imagine she operates under a similar agenda, but of course has far more power and is probably a lot more savvy about these things. But who knows?
I don't know if she's more savvy than you, Sam. I think that's too high of a bar for her.
Well, Emma, I'm going to take that as a compliment, and that
is
the perfect way to end this segment. Emma, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Folks can follow you on Emma Vigeland on Twitter. We'll put a link, obviously, in the podcast description. Thanks so much, Emma. Always a pleasure.
Yep. Thanks so much, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and I think if we're lucky, we're going to be able to wish somebody a something. I don't want to give it away, but we'll be right back with Judy Gold. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, the Majority Report. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sam Seder. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Fridays are great because we have the opportunity to play little songs that we're all stuck in our heads, and we finally get to play those songs. But this time, we're going to play two songs. Here is song number one.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, he's...
Okay, that's the song. Sometimes I get confused. But, Judy Gold, are you on the phone?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Judy.
Thank you.
I promised the folks two songs today, and here is the second
one.
Oh,
thank you.
It's that day that comes just once a year. We are happy that you are still here. If you think you're getting old, well, honey, let the truth be told. You only have eternity.
What is it?
It's hard to find a public domain happy birthday song.
It's hard to find a public domain happy birthday song. Happy birthday, Judy.
Thank you. You know, I can't think of
Hold on,
I'm
giving you the shofar. Giving you a shofar. All right. Judy.
Yeah. What the fuck song was that?
I don't know. I said to Matt, get a happy birthday song, but make it one that we're not going to get
Wait, do you have to pay for happy birthday?
Yeah, not only do we get demonetized probably if we did.
Well, do we have to pay if we just sing it ourselves?
That's so stupid.
Actually, it recently entered the public domain, but the problem I was having is when you search for public domain happy birthday recording, it's all news stories about that and not versions of it. So
we should put out.
Oh, really?
We could record our own.
We should record our own.
Started like more than 5 minutes before he asked you, then perhaps you would have found it.
You know what? I think, I asked like 3 or 4 days ago. I was like, get on this.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But you know how it works around here. Things are a little slow.
Let me see. I'm Googling happy birthday song.
We're going to.
Wow. It just came up.
We're going to record one. We're going to record one. We're going to put it on
here
YouTube.
We go.
We'll see about that.
Oh, wow.
Judy!
Wow, that was so hard. Oh, my God. That was so took me so long. I'm so glad I found that.
Judy.
Oh, God. Thank God. Yeah.
Now, I just want to tell people that I got a text from you.
Yeah.
Let's see. It was 1 a.m.
Yeah,
1 a.m. What day was it? I don't know. The other day.
I don't know.
I cannot. Oh. This is what she wrote. I cannot take much more.
Yes. 12:57 a.m.
I feel like everybody feels that to a certain extent.
How much more? Like, seriously, how much more do we have to put up with? Okay. They could have a video of him, like, taking a shit on the bed in Russia, right? On Obama's headshot, okay?
Not illegal.
And
not
still,
illegal. Not illegal.
So, right. Still, it would be like, he did not. That was not shit that was coming out. That right. was not shit. That was.
Exactly.
It's like
I had a suppository in there, and that's what it was.
Right. I honestly, like, it is like, you look at Maria Yovanovitch. That was my birthday present, by the way. Like, there's like, look at these people. They have given up their lives and to be public servants to defend our democracy around the world, and this fucking dumb shit reality show fucking horrible hair lying piece of crap with a dreck sons and dreck daughter and just fucking scum, just a scumbag.
Yeah.
Is being defended by people who they know he's full of shit. I mean, it's just like, come on. How much more of this is, like, what the fuck? I'm really getting near the end of my rope. I just, How much more do you want? It's a witch hunt. It's fake. Oh, you're just trying to get out. You're out to get him. He's best friends with Erdogan and fucking Putin. Like, what the fuck do you want? Like, are you fucking crazy? And there's no climate change? Oh, my God. I was on my bike on Monday. I was on my bike in a fucking, like a light jacket. Okay, Monday. Tuesday, Canada Goose. What the fuck?
I feel you on that one, Judy. I never know what to wear to ride my bike to work these days.
Yeah, I'm just saying, there's climate change. They're horrible people. They're horrible people. Can we just all agree that they're, I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Socialist, I don't care what the fuck you are. They are horrible people and should not be running this country.
I mean, I think there's a lot of us who agree with that. I think it's going to be even more difficult to watch the Republicans, assuming Donald Trump loses, which is, I don't know that it's a safe assumption, but assuming he loses.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Republicans pretend like they never knew him, or watching the mainstream media pretend like the Republicans had nothing to do with Donald Trump. That's going to be the part that's going to drive me nuts. Fortunately, we get there.
Lying, yeah.
Or we'll get someone even worse, and Trump will be rehabilitated in the same manner that they're now rehabilitating W.
Right. When we talk about Tom Cotton, horrible Tom Cotton is, everybody's going to be going, God, I wish we had Donald Trump. He was horrible, but at least he was stupid.
Right. Here's the deal. Okay. Here's the deal.
Yeah.
I'm a comic. I don't know if you knew that.
I was aware of that.
I sit at the Cellar, and I can't tell you how many comics were. Well, you know, he's going to win again. You know,
at the Comedy Cellar. The Comedy Cellar. We should tell people this is down
we're all miserable people anyway. But then that just takes it to another level. Well, you know, he's going to win it. You know, so there's four more years. There's no fucking way. If there's four more years, I don't know what I'm going to fucking do. I swear to God, like, there's no way. He's a fucking liar. They're all liars. And Don Jr. going on The View with his fucking bodyguard, Kimberly Guilfoyle. The fuck is that? And planting people in the audience so they'll clap. They're just so corrupt. They know nothing about how the government works. They're scum. He's a failed businessman. Oh, that's what businessmen, they want to pay up before. Shut the fuck up. He hasn't paid anyone. He owes people so much fucking money. Dump a fucking Trump steak up his fucking ass. I fucking hate him. Okay, sorry. You watch these hearings and you know, Jim fucking Jordan, put on a goddamn jacket, you fucking asshole, with your fucking shirt and tie in the fucking shower where someone's jerking off and, oh, yeah, that's what he does. Fuck you.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no.
It's bad today.
What did you think about the? What did you think? I assume you watched the Bill Taylor Kent hearings. I know you're watching Yovanovitch this morning. What did you think?
Yes, I think that to watch these people who are such patriots and so articulate and so knowledgeable and honest and well-meaning get questioned by fucking Devin Mullet Nunes and fucking Jim Jerkoff in the fucking shower Jordan.
Oh, Jim Jerkoff. We missed that.
Yeah, Jim Jerkoff. Yeah, Jim Jerkoff Jordan. You know, and who's the council guy with the eyes that are really close together? It's like,
Castor?
The Republican.
Castor.
Yeah, right. Castor oil. It's like, what are you doing? Like, these people, you're obviously such scumbags. And these people are so obviously like the nerdy, I have only good intentions. I mean, look at Bill Kent. I mean, how can you disparage these people? Like, they were patriots. up until this motherfucker, all of a sudden they're the enemy. What's the common denominator? Fucking Trump. That's the common denominator. And they were fine. No one did anything wrong until that fucking piece of shit came into office. All of a sudden they're the enemy.
Are you?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, you tour around, right, and do comedy.
Yes.
Now, we've been talking for years through the Trump administration, prior to that, but certainly through the Trump administration. As you go around, is there a difference? Do you notice a difference? Or have you changed your habits in terms of where you'll play because of Trump? Or
no, he already affects my life. In the most stressful manner, because I can't believe that someone could fucking get away with this shit. But, you know, I'm sure I don't get, I've been canceled twice. I'm sure because of, definitely because of Trump supporters.
Where
but,
was it? Where were you canceled?
Huntington, Long Island Jewish Center. Huntington Jewish Center.
Yeah.
Huntington, Long Island.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because apparently, you can't laugh you can't separate the person's party from their jokes. So the jokes were funny 3 years ago. You know, I was funny 3 years ago before Trump was president, but now I'm not funny anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Now,
it has never been like this. It has never been, there's never been a president that you could not make fun of. There was never a president that was in office and comics didn't get work because this one was, the Booker was a Republican. It's never happened before this lying piece of shit.
Now,
one because of the Russians. Yeah, it's just never happened before. It is, and he has no sense of humor. So because you would actually have to have some self-awareness and intelligence to have a sense of humor. So he doesn't have that, and neither do his, a lot of his supporters. But there are some supporters who do, who are like, you know what, Judy, I love you anyway. But they're few and far between.
Well, I think, now that you mentioned that, I think I read an article where Jerry Seinfeld was very upset about that you got canceled because of your politics, and that there was a lot of online strum and drang about, oh, wait a second. No, I'm sorry. That was not it. It was just that college kids didn't like his gay kid.
Yeah, he wouldn't defend me. Are you crazy?
I'm joking. I'm joking. I was making a point.
Funny.
I was making a little bit of a point about
that was nice. That was nice.
We only hear that type of stuff when it's like people don't laugh at my jokes at a college campus, as opposed to like, oh, I got canceled because of my politics. Which, look.
Meanwhile,
I don't think, to be honest with you, it sucks. I hopefully you had a kill fee, but I don't have a problem, canceling, booking comedians, finding out that my audience that I'm catering to, I run the, whatever it is, the Worcester JCC.
Right.
They're going to have a problem with
that. But it doesn't matter if you run the Worcester JCC. I'm not going to do Trump jokes at the Worcester JCC.
What I mean? Everybody listens to the Majority Report, and they hear you trashing Trump.
Right, that's true. I'm telling you, your listenership is through the roof. It has had an effect on my career, and I'm happy about it. I mean, I am filling rooms, and it's always I'm like, where'd you guys hear about me? Majority Report. It's every time. I can't walk down the street in New York. I can't even get on the subway. it's like, are you, wait. And then some people will be like, wait, I recognize that voice. Are you Judy Gold from the Majority Report? And I'm like, yeah. It's just.
No, I understand. I understand how much that must happen. I seem to remember, Maybe it was on this show where someone said, Judy, you should perform 25 questions for a Jewish mother as part of some live, you know, performance at like an off-Broadway place. And then what do I see yesterday?
Yes, in my, what happened.
On my Playbill subscription, I see Judy Gold to perform 25 questions for a Jewish mother as part of primary stages.
Well,
fall
you know, Sam, this is what happened. Okay. First of all, it did run off Broadway for many years. And then, you know, it's been about 14 years since.
Oh, okay.
Now, they had, primary stages had this theater and they had to cancel a show that they had put in. And they said, would you like to do one of your solo shows? And I said, you know, actually, I'd like to do 25 questions. And now I'm doing it for 2 weeks, 25 questions for a Jewish mother at the Cherry Lane Theater. I think it's starting November 29th, but I'm not sure.
That's exciting.
Oh, like maybe December 1st. Yeah, it'll be fun.
I've seen the Cherry Lane Theater. I've been to things.
Have you?
Is that the one down in the Village?
Yes, it's in the Village. And hopefully you'll be coming to see this, unless you're too busy with the Majority Report.
Well, things are pretty hopping these days. I went to the Cherry Lane Theater.
Yes, go ahead.
And I saw a play by a guy I knew who was somebody from Worcester, not a playwright, but a wealthy guy who fancied himself a playwright. And I saw a play there, and it it got reviewed by New York Magazine in one of the greatest lines in a review I've ever read, where the reviewer wrote, "Some things are so bad, they're good. This was worse."
No way.
Yes. It was brilliant, pretty amazing play. But
was it horrible?
It was I think it was so bad that it was actually, you know, almost good. But it was pretty bad.
Right.
I may come to that. I may if I'm around. Sure. The performance is run 21st to the 23rd is my understanding. 29th to the 15th. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, maybe I will be able to do it. What else is going on, Judy? So are you going to spend, I assume you're going to watch the, what are you going to do for your birthday?
Well, you know, I slept till like 10-ish. So that's present number one.
Right.
And then Elisa and I, you know, she just told me that, Elisa told me I have to be ready to leave the house at like 6:30. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah, so that's all I know. And, yeah, that's it. She made me a shake this morning and some waffles and some coffee. And I'm still in my pajamas, actually. And I'm going to get ready and go back to my apartment. And see, I like to go to the gym because they say happy birthday when you walk in because they can tell you, they say it's your birthday. You know, it's your birthday.
Of course.
I'm just such a fucking baby. And by the way, no birthday fundraiser. No birthday fundraiser today.
What does that mean?
Because you know what? You know how everyone's doing the birthday fundraiser? Like, you go online. It's like, for my birthday, I want to raise, you know, $5,000 for my favorite charity.
Oh, okay.
You haven't seen this?
No.
Like, it's like a birthday. So now, when it's your birthday, you have to raise money for a fucking charity. Yeah, it's on Facebook, but, you know, I rarely go on. But let me just tell you something. No birthday fun. The birthday fundraiser, I will announce the charity that I am raising $10,000 for today is Chase checking account number 120-456-7809. So I'll get that information. I mean, how do you function?
Me?
Knowing that these people are getting away with this shit every day. Like, I'm at the point where, you know, and people are like, well, you know, he did do the blah, blah. And it's like, no. He needs to be out. Pence needs to be out. They're all fucking liars. Pompeo, he's a fucking lying piece of shit. Roger Stone is guilty on all seven counts. Everyone associated with this motherfucker is a criminal. Every one of them.
It's true.
And he's witness tampering.
It's true. I don't know. Hope springs eternal. Go out there, go to Iowa, and get Bernie elected.
Okay. No. I'm not going to Iowa. Someone told me to go to a, whatchamacallit, a Trump rally. I'm not going to a Trump rally.
Oh, boy. I would follow you around with
They're like, camera. Oh, you should go to a Trump rally. I can't even, I think I might, yeah, I don't know what I would do.
I think that would be worth watching. I would sponsor that.
Okay, I'll go for you. I'll go to the Trump rally.
Oh,
I'll interview people. I'll do whatever you want.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes.
All right, we'll talk.
I will go to a Trump rally for you, and I will, and I'll try to be nice to them. I'll be like, what is his best characteristic? Like, I will ask questions about what they love about him.
Honestly, the only thing I can think of is that is Scanners. Remember that movie where Scanners, was it a Cronenberg movie? Where, you know, you basically people's heads would explode because they were getting their heads scanned. I just literally think that it's possible that your head would explode. Like, I could see you asking a question and listening there and just like containing yourself and all the energy just going right up to your head and it literally exploding.
Yeah. I would do that for you.
Wow. We're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Judy, honestly, you're a national treasure, and I wish you the happiest of all birthdays.
Sam. And by the way, your appearances on MSNBC, you're excellent, and you're very handsome, as Elisa, my girlfriend, will say.
There you go.
But you're doing an excellent job, and you are... I mean, you do have a very nice career, don't you think? You have the Majority Report. You're on MSNBC. You do, you know, you're in these cartoons. Like, you voice, you're doing very well, and I think you should be very proud of yourself. And you're good looking.
That's a weird thing to sort of say to somebody. I feel pretty good about what's going on. Why?
I'm just saying you should.
Who's saying that I shouldn't?
You know what? You're just as pompous as they are, you fucking asshole.
Judy, thank you so much. I love you. We'll be in touch.
I love you. Get him out now before I fucking have a fucking... All right, thank you.
Bye. Judy Gold, ladies and gentlemen. Judy Gold. Can we play that Scanners thing? He just put it in the thing. Just do that, and then we'll go into the... Yeah, just play.
I'd like you to think of something specific, something that will not breach the security of your organization, and that you will not object to having disclosed to this group. Something personal, perhaps.
All right. Yes, I have something. Do I have to close my eyes?
It doesn't matter.
All right, yes, I have something.
This is the opening of the movie, I think, if I remember correctly. Oh, this guy thought that he was going to be able to scan him, but it's going the other way.
Never seen this.
Oh, you haven't? That's Judy asking a question of a Trump supporter. And she's trying to keep herself... Yeah, he's making America great again, Judy. Oh! There you go.
Iowa State Fair.
There you go. Folks, we're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program. Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to take a couple of your calls, probably take a couple of IMs. I don't know if we'll get to too many. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. It's pretty crazy. On Monday, we're going to have a regular show. On Tuesday, we're going to probably start pretty early. We're going to be streaming the hearings. That may be the show for Tuesday. I'm not sure yet. We got to figure this stuff out. Wednesday, we'll definitely be streaming the hearings, Sunderland, and then we will be doing the Democratic debate and So, you know, it's nutso around here in the YouTube political news space. A lot of stuff happening. And you can support our endeavors by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. There you not only become a member of the program, you get the free show. You get it commercial free. And then we give you extra content virtually every day. I don't know if there's been a day that we don't do that. You know, maybe a holiday or two here or there. And it just costs pennies a day. And you can support this program. And also, if you cannot afford the fun half, but you want it, send us an email, majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will hook you up. Put in the subject line, help with membership. Help with membership. And we will get to you. You got to wait a little time because it takes us a little time to process these things. And it's your support that makes this show possible. Don't forget, sign up for the AM Quickie. When you sign up for the AM Quickie, an angel gets their wings. It's free, totally free. AMQuickie.com. You can subscribe. You get 5 minutes of political headline news every morning in your box, voiced by myself and Lucy Steiner. We switch off depending on when I have my kids. I don't know what she does when she's not doing it. She doesn't, maybe raising another family. I don't know. But, give us a review on iTunes. That would be very helpful. And you can also gift a membership at jointhemajorityreport.com. There's an opportunity to gift people a membership there as well, I believe. So if you want to give one for the holidays. Speaking of gifts, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Buy the Majority Report blend. Follow us on Instagram, majorityreport.fm. All of these ways of staying in touch and being part of the show. Check out TMBS. It happened on Tuesday of this week. Patreon.com/TMBS. Or it's a YouTube channel. Jamie, the Antifada.
This week on the Antifada, I speak with Tom, Terrence, and Tanya of the Trillbilly Workers Party, one of my favorite podcasts, about their media project, the recent election in Kentucky, and why they don't believe impeachment played a role, and how they became dyed-in-the-wool radicals as well as electoral skeptics. Believe me, folks, they came by it honestly. We also talk about jobs versus the environment, the pitfalls of the Just Transition program, and we get an update on Penny the Pony, which regular listeners of the Trillbilly Workers Party podcast are all very invested in what happens to Penny. Also, and that's free for everybody to listen to, and that's out now. Also, today, as a premium offering for our treasured patrons, I have just released a new episode of The Vampire Castle, wherein Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session and I talk not about social justice warriors, but about actual cool-ass vampires. In this edition, we talk about two very different but both very 80s vampire movies, Tony Scott's The Hunger from 1983 and Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys, 1987. So trigger warning, I do talk about Jim Morrison a little bit as the ultimate symbol of a culture in decay, but think you're all going to like it a lot. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt.
Up now for patrons, up for everybody. Tomorrow is Afra Ben. We talk about Afra Ben. She was the first British woman to earn her living by her pen. She was a spy for the monarchists in the Restoration. And we talk about, it's an interesting book on a royal slave, a guy who gets enslaved, but it's a problem not because he's a person, but because he's descended from royal lineage. So it's not exactly an anti-slavery book, but it's 1688, so what do you want, folks? But yeah, check that out, everybody, tomorrow.
Quick break, fun half, see you there. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. you're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.